Welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program that addresses challenges faced regionally, the need for and consequences of change, and how today's choices impact tomorrow's community. The program is an extension and production of Action for Healthy Communities and provided in collaboration with KCBX. Today's host is Chris Kington Barker, and her guests will discuss the current state of the child care crisis in San Luis Obispo County and the efforts and assistance needed to reduce the burden on families, providers, and businesses. You're invited to listen, learn, and participate in the conversation. You can call in your questions to be part of today's discussion at 805-549-8855 or email them to voices@kcbx.org. Today's show is being conducted over Zoom, and Chris Kington, are you with us?
Thank you, Hank. It's good to see you.
It's good to be seen.
Prior to the COVID-19 pandemic, finding reliable child care on the Central Coast was at best difficult and cost prohibitive for many families. The pandemic has worsened the situation, however. According to the California Budget and Policy Center, since COVID-19 pandemic began, nearly 30% of the jobs in the child care industry have disappeared. It's not just parents that are feeling these effects, but businesses too. As employers struggle to find employees to fill vacancies, it may come as no surprise. A recently released study by Cuesta College found nearly 1,400 parents in SLO County are unable to return to the outside home work due to family obligations. So what can and is being done to help with close the gap of childcare access? Today's guests will be offering a closer look at that question. Lauren Thorne, Director of Early Learning and Education Support at San Luis Obispo County Office of Education. Rochelle Bolle, Coordinator of Quality Early Learning Manager of the SLO County or San Luis Obispo Child Care Planning Council, and Jim D'Antona, President and CEO of San Luis Obispo Chamber of Commerce, who've joined me today. And I want to welcome all of you for being here. This is obviously a huge topic for a number of people, and I'm glad we can give it some airtime today. And Rochelle, I'm going to start with you. As I understand it, we'll be talking a little bit about a collaboration of a number of organizations and agencies. So if you don't mind taking a moment to just talk a little bit about what those organizations are and then maybe how they all came together in this effort.
Definitely. And thank you for having us here today to talk about
childcare. My pleasure.
So about this, actually this month marks our 3-year anniversary of our town hall, which was called Where is the Care? Where we started looking at how we can tackle this childcare crisis. This has been a problem for many, many, many years, and there isn't one single solution. So what we started doing is looking at how many different ways we can tackle this crisis. We usually have our early learning partners, our early care and education partners at the table. So myself from the Child Care Planning Council, Community Action Partnership of San Luis Obispo, and the Child Care Resource Connection, as well as the County Office of Education and our typical partners, usually look at child care and early learning. With Where is the Care, we kind of flipped it on its head and looked at who else needs to be at the table. So bringing in our business sector, the chambers of commerce, bringing in local businesses and employers to really look at this, and then also building stronger partnerships with our local government officials, which is something in the childcare sector we really hadn't done before. And so with Where is the Care, we're able to build new partnerships, and we're going 3 years strong and have a new initiative called We Are the Care that really looks at how we can collaboratively address this childcare crisis from many different vantage points, which we're really excited to see and actually are starting to see some of those efforts come to fruition. It's by no means solved, but we are seeing a lot of headway as we're moving through all of this.
Well, I love that. It's not just agencies sitting down and trying to figure out what services they can create to try and fix something, because this is much bigger than that. What was the follow-up then, and what has been the progress over the last 3 years? Have agencies and businesses and have those partners remained involved?
Yes, definitely. So we've had many more new partners as well. So we've not only branched and really had a pretty good following and set work of this We Are the Kids initiative. We have four different task forces. But as we're moving through all of this, we're actually seeing results coming to the table. So we have one sector that's looking at local government engagement through all of this. And we finally now are seeing, especially through this pandemic and the rise of attention and the need for childcare, our own local cities stepping up. And what that looks like is dedicated funding. That's what they have those levers on. And so we're seeing dedicated funding from the city of San Luis Obispo, the city of Pismo, Grover Beach, Arroyo Grande, and then also Atascadero and Paso in the works. And so we're seeing local government come to the table of how do we address this childcare issue? And it is not just a quick fix. Here, we're going to build one program and that's it. It's how do we help support the infrastructure that exists? And how do we help support children and families through that process? So we're really lucky to see all of that work happening. And another really amazing piece of all of this is getting our board of supervisors on board. And so just a couple of months ago, March 15th, actually, the County Board of Supervisors historically dedicated $3 million towards childcare efforts through their ARPA, their American Rescue Plan Act funding, which is huge. That is a huge vote of confidence to not only the childcare sector, but towards children and families that they are willing to help and be a part of this issue, this solution. And also recognizing that it's not a one-time solution. We're just going to pay for childcare for everyone for a month, which would be amazing. But at the same time, they're looking and trusting the field in terms of creating different and dynamic solutions. So it's not just one solution. There are at the very least 10 different initiatives we are working on right now from different angles of how we can help support childcare and children and families. So excited to see what that looks like. And also really excited for some of these pilot programs that we have throughout the county, but specifically at the SLO Chamber, where we're looking at how else do we not only tackle childcare as a business and childcare as an employee need, but also childcare from an employer perspective and what that looks like, or also hopefully decreasing the need for childcare through family-friendly workplace practices, which is really awesome to see that.
So when you're talking about the funding, for instance, you mentioned from the cities, is that the cities applying funding for their own employees for childcare, or those are like grants, or how does that money fund in a way that it gets toward resolving some of the identified issues with childcare?
Definitely. It's a great question. I wish it was a simple answer. Every single city is completely different. So some cities directly are funding the certain programs and offering subsidies through those programs that exist within their city. Some of them have offered and are part of a program where we're supporting new childcare providers to come into play. So that might be people that would like to offer childcare within their own homes. So we call those family childcare providers, or if they would like to open up a center. And so that's a commercial facility that offers childcare. And so helping new programs get started. And so that it's not an easy process as we move forward. Health and safety of children is at the forefront of all of that. And so through those pilot programs, we're able to come alongside anyone that is interested in joining this field. And it could be for any reason. It could be you have grandchildren and you're already taking care of them and you could essentially take care of a few more. Or if you're a parent thinking about that balance between, is it going to be enough to go to work and actually make a sustainable living wage while paying for childcare, or could you open your own small business and take care of your own children while also helping other children and families? And so helping people through that process. So that's one of the grant programs, is helping people through that process so that they can open their own family childcare or center-based program. We also have some of the cities that have created direct subsidies for families to apply to. And so that also leverages the work that is happening at the state level. So we do have quite a bit of state funding that comes down to support subsidized childcare that are for our income eligible families. But again, as much as it is, it is not enough to really meet that need. And so we're looking for a lot of different types of partnerships to help meet that need.
There, when you were doing your brainstorming, when you were all sitting at the table, the different players, you probably came from different places in terms of identifying different barriers to childcare, right? And I would assume that employers have their barriers to providing childcare. Cities have barriers. There probably were also barriers for, you lost a lot of people from providing childcare. What are some of the barriers that are preventing people from getting into providing childcare? And how do you overcome that?
Definitely. So I'll start off on that one and then hand it over to you, Lauren.
Okay.
As we're looking at providing childcare and what it takes to be a childcare provider, it's not easy. It's not just a simple entry-level position as we're looking at that. There's a lot of certifications and requirements that is expected of our early educators, really. And when we look at that, the wages that they receive are not comparable to what we're expecting of them. We don't expect a childcare provider, an early educator, to just turn the TV on and say, good luck. We really do have a high expectation, and the wages that they receive do not match that expectation. And so again, as we're looking at the longer term vision of that field, it's not a long-term career for some. And so we are losing our childcare workforce to either higher paying jobs or less demanding jobs. I don't know of any provider that leaves at the end of the day and just stops thinking about every single child that's in their program. I wish I was a childcare provider before as well. You never turn it off. You're still thinking about them. You're still working on your program. And so as we're looking at this, helping the regard for the field, and that starts with their wages and the pay.
So is that something that's being addressed and looked at, how to elevate that field so that it does seem more prestigious in terms of what aligned with the expectations of certification, knowledge, and then how do you do that?
Yeah, so I can address that. This is Lauren Thorne from the County Office of Education. And I mean, there, I think more than anything, COVID has sort of underlined everything you've just described, right? It's saying families are realizing we need childcare, we need quality care. And what does quality mean for me personally as a parent? And what does a provider have to offer? And while every provider is striving to provide quality services, they're also striving to pay the bills at the end of the month, right? And they're looking at themselves as a business. So what we've done here at the County Office of Education to help support this effort is to partner with Cuesta with the Ticket to Teach program. And so what Ticket to Teach does is essentially we're subsidizing the wages of enrolled students at Cuesta College. And once they're employed, we're increasing their compensation to help them pay the bills at the end of the day, to offer them this place where they say, okay, I'm earning a livable wage and there is hope. We are helping with textbook costs, tuition costs, and things like that. And so being able to get them in the field in a place where they are providing these quality early learning services, but also receiving the financial support and then the mentoring support along with that, because they all go hand in hand. We really need to look at the big picture in order to have overall success.
And in starting a business, is there something like you've talked about, you know, whether you do a center, you know, because there were a lot of centers that got closed because they just couldn't sustain it. And parents didn't want to continue to pay to not be able to take their children there. That was a burden on the parents and then also a burden on the centers. Is there something that's built into that to help people learn how to start a business, or and what would that look like?
Definitely. We actually have a few programs in our county, all of that work together, which is really neat that we actually work together on the back end. So through our Child Care Resource Connection, housed at Capslow, there is a program that helps new people that would like to be a part of this child care process and literally walks with them hand in hand through the entire process. And once they're even licensed and operating their program, they can continue to still receive services through Capslow's Child Care Resource Connection, as well as through another initiative that we have called Quality Counts that also works with programs in any regard, whether it be working on how to provide quality care for children, how to build their staff and their team, looking at human resources, looking at how to stay open through the many, many different iterations of COVID protocols, and even looking at some of the quality curriculum that they are providing in the lesson planning. So there's a lot of different programs that are here ready to support anyone that is interested in childcare, or even anyone that is interested in their raising the bar and the quality and that continuous quality improvement of a program that they're already working with or that they are a patron of. So we also work with parents within that regard too, if they have concerns or if they even want to say, actually, I want my provider to have that same regard. What can I do? How can I help the rest of this field and my own provider? And we've helped people say, this is what your provider needs. Ask. Half the time, they don't ask for all the things that they need or could use, but definitely opening that door for communication, because it is a community. We need to all come together and really help to serve our children and families.
Thank you. I'm Chris Kington-Barker with you for Central Coast Voices on KCBX, your Central Coast listener-supported radio station. The voices with me today are Lauren Thorne, Director of Early Learning and Educational Support at San Luis Obispo County Office of Education, Rochelle Bollet, Coordinator of Quality Early Learning Manager of the San Luis Obispo Child Care Planning Council, and Jim D'Antona, President and CEO of the San Luis Obispo Chamber of Commerce. We're talking about the current limit in access to childcare, its impact on families, businesses, and communities, and local options and solutions being explored and in the works. We invite you to bring your comments about today's topic into our discussion. And to do that, you can call 805-549-8855 or you can email your questions to me at voices@kcbx.org. And Jim, I'm going to jump over to you because as a Chamber of Commerce CEO and President, you probably hear a lot of feedback and a lot of frustration from the business side of it. Can you talk a little bit about what they've come up with of what is the frustration? What are they having as a result of the lack of childcare that is really concerning for them?
Yeah, absolutely. It was so interesting. And Chris, thanks for so much for having us and having this conversation. So important. It was, as Rochelle was talking about, I can't believe it's been 3 years since we had that conversation of where's the care? And I showed up to it to try and just, this sounds interesting. Yes, we've heard childcare is an issue. We were actually doing some interesting studies in our committees in the chamber, asking our business partners, talk to us about childcare. Is it an issue for you? And the feedback we got was absolutely mind-blowing because, again, when we take a look at this issue, we think, well, we just need to open more businesses or figure that out. But when we people were responding back, employees of companies were responding back that they're paying more for childcare than their house payment, we were like, this is a problem. Like, we need to start thinking about how to do these things differently in 2019. And showing up to that Where's the Care event 3 years ago, we started hearing some interesting ideas. All the terrible things that went with COVID, it did actually start to help us figure out some of the issues. The flexible work schedule, right? That idea, that thing where you can work from home, really to try and help. But the one thing we found in all of this was, how are we going to find the amount of resources or centers or childcare facilities to handle the volume of people who needed the care? People were talking about wait lists. Employees of businesses were talking about wait lists years long. So you're getting on a wait list before you even have the child. That's craziness. And what we were seeing back in 2019, there was some strain on the staff side. It was hard to find employees, as everything in San Luis Obispo. It's a challenge because there's only 280,000 people here. And so getting the amount of people you need to make your business more efficient is always strained. And so where you can take some of these pieces, we're like, this could really help our businesses be more productive. After COVID and now where we are in the crisis around staffing, this has become ultra priority. If you want to get enough staff, enough people on your team to be productive, get all the business that you can, generate all the income you can, you need the team. And at this point, with the cost, with all the challenges there are, if employees have a lot of choices to go potentially where to land. So if your company isn't doing things to make life easy for them or help ease the issue, you're not going to be the choice. So we're really hearing from our employers that, A, Jim, what can we do? How do we be family friendly? And it was great. We were very lucky on our board. We happen to have First Five's Slo County's executive director, Wendy Wendt, who was like, I think we have some ideas here. The county was talking about this issue. And so we've really jumped in full bore on this because we believe it's a business private sector issue along with families and your own personal issue. So there is a lot here where the private sector has a responsibility and, to be honest, self-interest in making sure we help sort out this issue so that we can actually get to our full economic potential, unlock the governor that could potentially hold our region back.
What kinds of solutions does it look like some of the employers are leaning toward, and what are some of the creative things that are being discussed and kind of banded around?
Yeah, well, I mean, mind body here in the city of San Luis Obispo was one of those first out the gate, like, we are building a child care facility in our building. So our campus. So our staff has a place to go so that we know they can come to work. So that was, and that's the ultimate level, right? The ultimate level is putting in a facility at your place of work. Trust automation is another front of the line on building a facility to help do that. And so that's the ultimate level for business folks, but not everybody's big enough or have the resources to do that. But when you look at other folks, building connections with other businesses so that they may be able to buy up spaces in a childcare facility so that a childcare facility doesn't have to worry about its revenue constantly going up and down and up and down, right? They can actually build a business model. If three companies get together and say, we can purchase 10 spaces, they take 10 spaces and we take 10 spaces, you're creating a business model that's successful for a childcare facility. But it doesn't even have to be to that level. We've seen lots of folks doing small things like, oh, letting start times come in later so that you can drop your kids off for school, especially now that they can go back to school. Or it's giving them time in the afternoon to go pick up their kids and be a part. So that flex scheduling really is one of those first key pieces that I think almost anybody could do that can make a difference in an employee's life on how they deal with their family. But there are so many pieces. Some of them, you know, we have great employers here who are doing amazing work and can't highlight them all. But, you know, we have Morrison Garitano, who's really doing some great work for their employees to try and create resources or let them save money to pay for childcare and almost a pre-tax setting. There's all sorts. And that's the great part. You know, we've, as part of our partnership, we have hired a staff member whose whole job it is to help private sector businesses figure out the myriad of options that would work for them in this family-friendly workplace accelerator program. And there is, we've put together a whole resource, a toolkit, which came out of We Are the Care, and to let people figure out what works best for them and what things can they do to help their employees. So it is so interesting. Every day you hear companies thinking of new and interesting things that others hadn't thought of. And through this work, being able to share that information across, again, to try and on what Rochelle talked about a little earlier, which was reducing the need by changing some of these workplace issues. And then you'll reduce the bandwidth of need there and maybe free up some space for folks who don't have that option. Because if you think about folks in the retail industry, maybe in the hotel service industry, the ag industry, you can't work from home, right? Like you have to be there. So for office, it's a little easier to do some of those things. But there are certain industries where that's not even an option.
No.
So you need that availability to go do that work. And again, we really are looking forward to working with our tourism.
Right. And that businesses. Was going to be one of my questions is, as you're talking about the kinds of options, what about the tourism industry? Because that's not an industry where you can get in your car and go pick up your kid and come back. You know, when you're, I can't count the number of tables I waited on. So, in doing those kinds of jobs, you don't just walk away from your tables and say, hey, got a kid, I'll be back. You know, leave your money on the table and, you know, the tips on, okay. So are those employers in this group that are having this discussion?
Yeah, absolutely. It's the hardest. They are in the hardest. Ag and tourism are in the two hardest industries, right? The ag, you don't start your day at 9 a.m., right? Like your day starts when the sun starts coming up and then when does it end, right? So you're at these really odd hours. Same holds true for the tourism. I was in the hotel industry. Your shifts start at those same weird times, right? Early morning or end super late. Like, so having a childcare facility that operates between 7 a.m. and 5 p.m. may not be helpful. So one of the hardest things that we will always have to deal with is how do we meet those really odd hours, the non-standard work hours, and that one we haven't gotten a great solution on, but we're having the conversations, which I think is the best part, because we're thinking about, okay, how are we going to do this? And maybe it is. Maybe that's another one this is going to be on employers to create a childcare space right there on the piece of land that they have, and then work through to a normal one within normal hours.
Right. Well, we're going to take a brief break. I'm going to turn it over to you, Kim, for station identification, a little music, and then we'll be back.
Thank you, Chris. You are listening to KCBS. And we are just in the middle of a break for Central Coast Voices. Coming up,
Nina Jankowicz, an expert on disinformation, including from Russia, who has advised the Ukrainian government. She was tapped to head the Biden administration's new disinformation governance board. After she was targeted with disinformation and harassed online, she resigned and the board's work was suspended. Join us.
Fresh Air comes your way at 3 o'clock this afternoon right here on KCBX. Support for KCBX comes from Hospice Slo County, the non-medical volunteer hospice in the county for over 43 years. Hospice Slo County helps those who are facing a life-limiting illness, end of life, or grief. Learn more at hospiceslo.org. And don't forget, the 34th annual Live Oak Music Festival is coming soon on June 17th through the 19th at El Choro Regional Park, a Slo County park. The whole family is invited to camp for the weekend, hear music by some of the world's finest entertainers, enjoy food and shop wares from a variety of vendors, and plenty of activities for the kids. To learn more and see the full lineup, head over to liveoakfestival.org. Don't forget, the community calendar features arts, entertainment, nonprofit events in San Luis Obispo, Santa Barbara, and Southern Monterey counties. You could submit your item or event to be shared through our calendar page. That's on our website at kcbx.org. Let's head back to Central Coast Voices with Chris.
Welcome back. My guests today are Lauren Thorne, Director of Early Learning and Education Support at San Luis Obispo Office of Education, Rochelle Boulay, Coordinator and Early Quality Learning Manager of the San Luis Obispo Child Care Planning Council, and Jim D'Antona, President and CEO of San Luis Obispo Chamber of Commerce. A reminder, if you have a question for today's guests or a comment for our discussion, we welcome hearing from you. Call us at 805-549-8855, or you can email your questions and comments to voices at KCBX, and we'll get them on the air. Talk a little bit about the County Office of Education working with some of the child care centers through early learning centers, and then a little bit more about what's going on in Paso Robles.
Sure. Thanks, Chris. At the County Office of Education, we actually operate 8 state preschool programs, also known as the early learning centers. So we have them. We subcontract up in San Miguel with the school district there, and then we serve students across our county all the way down to Napomo. So we serve about 140 students in a part-day preschool program. And within that, it's first 5 funding that we get to subsidize some of our child care slots with. And so we are serving all students with any sort of income background and learning guidelines that are needed. Different types of students with different needs. So within the county, we are able to help parents have services for their children so that they are able to work. The early learning centers have historically been centers that we've offered from the county office, but over the course of the last 2 years, we've really seen a need in care. Mm-hmm. And so our wait lists naturally have grown. We could essentially be operating twice the amount of programming that we are currently offering. So this coming school year, we're looking at increasing capacity in both North County and South County to address this need based off of what we see on our wait list. And in addition to that, parents are asking for full day programming, right? Because part day works for some families, but not for everybody.
Yeah.
So we are working with the state to secure some funding to be able to provide full day services so that we can accommodate those needs. Year after year, we have had parents in a parent survey at the end of the year say we need full day care. So we are trying to address that. And if we can't directly address that, then we work with other agencies to partner and blend or braid funding. And in addition to that, we've talked a little bit about the business sector and being able to provide services on site. Here at the county office, I've worked closely with Dr. Brescia to make that happen. In our facilities team, we recently received funding to be able to offer childcare on our county office campus on Highway 1, just across the street from Cuesta. It's a good place when people are traveling to and from work from Morro Bay through San Luis. So with that program, we're looking at having the site on campus at county office and partnering with Cuesta to reserve either some slots for their faculty and our staff, as well as extend their lab student program. So having the early childhood education students come across the street and complete their field work so that they're getting on the job experience as they're taking their courses at Cuesta College.
Is that definitely set up to be launched sometime soon?
Yes, it is. We don't have a definite date. Okay. We are working through construction. So we are working with our architecture team to finalize plans. It is happening as far as when we're looking at the 2023 calendar year. So it will be in the works, and we will be partnering with, or it is in the works, and we will be partnering with Cuesta to make things happen on the back end with the lab school and the early childhood education program.
And now, does Cal Poly, Jim, still have their child care program that they use for also training for their early education for their,
Yes, they, or I'm sorry. Yeah, if you have it, Lauren, but yes, it is the Cal Poly is, but I think oversubscribed would be a light way of putting it. But it is a great, again, source right there on campus to try and help those folks deal with that.
Right. You know, it used to be in the day when I had a kiddo that had to go into childcare, we had co-op care that was part of that. But if there's all these licensures and stuff now, does that prevent doing something creative like co-op care for childhood care?
Actually, it helps and supports through everything is a process, as it always is. Mm-hmm. And licensing of childcare, I will say this, it is a double-edged sword. We have licensing for the health and safety of the children and families that we serve, but sometimes it can add, you know, some extra hoops. But I think the co-op model, it's still alive and well throughout our county for how it serves different families. And I think the really neat piece is that there isn't one type of childcare program that's needed. Yeah. There are many different kinds, as we were talking earlier about different hours, evenings, weekends, overnight. If people want to have the ability to be with their child during a portion of it and want to be a part of that early learning process, all of those different pieces are really great to see how many different options we have. And then also just piggybacking off of something that Lauren was saying too, with the County Office of Ed's new program and having that on-site expansion of early learning and partnering with Cuesta College, that's training up our workforce. So Cal Poly, Cuesta, both of those programs have lab components, and we call them lab components. It's the on-site childcare and on-site early learning training programs. And so as we were talking earlier before about the requirements, that is a requirement. It's not just, I love kids. Yes, you have to love kids. But you also need to know how to work with children, understand the foundations of child development. And so that happens when you are working with a seasoned teacher. And so as these programs are coming to fruition and really learning and how we can expand them, because the more people we can train, the more people that can go out into other programs and how we can expand those different models. And another really great model that we have in our county and we're building on and expanding is something called Bear Kittens up in Paso. And I'll let Lauren talk a little bit about that as well, but it's really starting with our high schoolers. So it's amazing.
I love the name, by the way. That's cute. What are bear kittens?
So, Rochelle, correct me if I'm wrong, but the bear kittens, what's the high school mascot is?
The bear.
The bear kit, or the bear cats. So
bear cats. So then we have the kittens. Yeah, there we go. So that's where that name comes from. But as far as what Paso Robles High School is doing, I've been able to work with them in the last 2 years with our Ticket to Teach program, and have learned so much about their model and what they're doing. They have what we call the dual enrollment program, right? So through Cuesta, their students are enrolled in college courses where they're earning college units at the high school with an instructor from the high school, as well as from Cuesta College. So they're getting the units. And then what's really amazing about this is that they have their on-site preschool program, the Bear Kittens programs, where students or teachers, staff, and faculty send their youngest children to this preschool program. And so then our high school students from 10th to 12th grade are there in the classroom supporting the lead teacher alongside that teacher, and being able to essentially apply what they're learning in their dual enrollment classes in that classroom. So it's a really good model to kind of grow our own, right? Capture the audience while they're interested, get those students in the program to figure out if this is a path that they'd like to take, get the experience. In return, staff and faculty are getting the quality care that they need. So we've talked with other high schools in our county to be able to essentially launch this at other high schools and get the dual enrollment going and getting this on-site care for the then faculty and staff at the various schools across our county.
How many children do they have in the Bear Kitten program?
Gosh, I would say somewhere between 25 and 30 students.
Really? That's wonderful.
And I've been able to be in the classroom early in my career here. I went out and supported with some professional development. It's just amazing to see the high school students alongside the lead teacher really learn to take leadership in the classroom, have a high school class where they're sitting lesson planning for their preschool classroom instruction and collaborating with their peers, and then getting guidance and leadership from their high school teacher. And then to see them apply that work and to have ownership, it's just takes on a whole new level. And so when we can capture them that early and say, all right, let's help you move along in your coursework at Cuesta College, they have the capacity to do that. And so with their lead instructors and faculty taking that on and really being able to just mentor these students through the program and then support them across our programs that are part of the Quality Counts program that Rochelle has talked to us about today.
Are the other schools showing interest in using that model for their own schools?
Yeah, so recently in conversation with Cuesta, I know that they've worked with Morro Bay and Atascadero, and there's new leadership at the San Luis Obispo High School, and I'm not sure quite how that all is working out, but I know that there's communication happening between other high schools so that this can take sort of launch and, you know, be able to support our students across the county and the workforce.
Yeah, that would be wonderful. The other thing that I would think, too, is that for parents, if they had a student that was part of those programs, they'd make a much better babysitter. If I was going to, you know, rather than your kids sitting and watching television, I would
most
think
definitely
be more engaged. And frankly, I'd pay them more. So I would see. I think you got something that really is going there.
Yeah, we always go back to that quality care piece. We're not babysitting.
Not
putting them in front of a TV. It's about learning how to really provide care, because every child has a right to care. And that's what we always want to remember, is going back to that. Well, we have parents who need the care to have their child somewhere while they're working. It's also the child's right. And that's what we always want to be able to just share with everybody, is 0 to 5, right? So much of that brain development is happening. And so to be able to provide somebody with the heart, but also just the passion to be able to serve our students.
Something that has been brought up to me by people about childcare is that there is some relief. You were talking about the early education program, and those programs are available for people that can't access them because they're in a certain income level, right? The people that are really clustered in that middle that make too much money to qualify for subsidy, but aren't necessarily in this area able to earn wages where it isn't really feeling a pinch, if you're paying $2,700 a month for childcare for two kids, what, you know, what are some of the things that are going to be available for them?
Yeah, so I'll speak on behalf of county office, and then I'll let Rochelle kind of speak on behalf of the council on resource and referral. But for county office specifically, I think that's a great point you bring up, Chris. We do provide services to families who are of low income, but we also provide services to anybody outside of that income threshold. So when you hear free preschool, you automatically assume that you have to qualify. That is not the case for our programs. We actually get 40 of our slots from First Five, who then say, regardless of income, we will take anybody who needs care. So we are able to serve anybody, not just those who are low income, which, I'm glad that you brought that up, because so many people think when you hear free, you have to qualify.
Yeah.
So, and with the state funding, we also take families, you have to take a certain percent that are beyond that threshold to be able to serve everyone again, right? So with our county office funds, we are able to serve families. And that is why we've seen such an increase, right? Because we're trying to get that word out. We want to serve everyone who can apply and complete the application process, because we know that in the end, children are being served.
Yeah. One of the things that that I read recently was that globally, women perform childcare 2.5 times more than as unpaid care than and domestic work as men do. And so we're, as women, impacted a lot more. And I think that was seen during the pandemic too, that women having to give up their careers or really make those decisions about, do I stay home with the kids? Oh, who gets to be the teacher? Hello, it's me. Who is that person? Is that shifting, or are you still seeing that that is still really a challenge here?
That is definitely still the case, and has been definitely exacerbated through the pandemic, and a lot of two parent households had to make a decision, and were forced into that decision of who has to stay home with children, if childcare isn't available, if it's being closed, or if schools are being closed. Someone has to make that decision. And as you were saying before, and usually the decision had to go with whose income is lower. And traditionally, and just historically, and that's more of a women's issue, is looking at whose income was lower and who could afford to stay home. As we're looking as a community and as a county at more single income families and what that looks like when that isn't even an option.
Right.
We're looking at this. So definitely this has become a huge issue as we're moving across the board. I also sit on our county's commission on the status of women and girls, and this has risen to the top in terms of childcare and how it completely plays out into the workforce and women's workforce, and women going into having a job outside of the home. But the other side of this, when we're looking at this, is 90% of our childcare workforce is also women. And what does that look like as our programs are closing, or the changes in capacity and how many children we can actually serve throughout this pandemic, and also the expenses of being a 90% women-owned business sector as we're looking at this. And so we're looking from many different ways at childcare. And I know at the chamber, we're looking at how we can support these small businesses. When we're talking about programs that exist, it's not just a childcare program, it's a small business that's operated within our community.
Right.
So again, those dynamic solutions from many, many, many different angles. And so it's not just, you know, childcare supports and subsidies that we can do. Can we offer small business supports? How do we help streamline even bookkeeping for some of these programs, so that way families and children can receive the benefits for that. If a provider is not overburdened with bookkeeping and we can support them through that, they can provide better quality care for the children and families that are in their program. And so again, it's that same piece of really coming at this childcare crisis from so many different angles. And we finally have a lot of different brains at the table that really can give us those different and dynamic solutions. We've been looking at it through the lens of how do we help just childcare, but it's businesses and families and employers and employees.
Right. Yeah. You know, that the we're talking about child care for younger kids, but then there's also the kid that isn't a child care, stay with a child care person age group. And when I was raising my daughter, that was aftercare. It was after school care. And I used to have the ability to have the YMCA pick her up and bring her to the YMCA in Pismo Beach. And they had a program that was an after-school program that went till 6 till I could get there. Those things have become less available or fuller. What's being discussed about that older kid group that really isn't a good kid group to leave unattended with a Nintendo and a cell phone and an internet all by themselves until mom and dad get home?
So I'll respond on that. A lot of work is actually happening with our school age care and what that looks like and the expanded learning opportunities. So there is actually a lot of state funding coming down through the Department of Education that is helping our school districts to think of that and how they can support. So it might not necessarily be on a school site as we're looking at this. This new funding, which we call ELOP, the Extended Learning Opportunities Program, and it's giving our school districts, our schools, the ability to look outside of that 8:30 to 2:30 mm-hmm. block of time and really expand and an acknowledgement that the expansion of care needs to happen. Our families are needing care. And so some of our school districts and schools are getting really, really creative in what that looks like and being able to contract with the Boys and Girls Club or the YMCA to offer those services, to contract with music programs after school. And so those opportunities all exist. And so I would encourage anyone listening or that wants to learn more about that, you can reach out to the Planning Council, but also even just your school and ask them what else is out there. A lot is, and this is again, all in the works as it's being worked on and hopefully going to be launched with our 2023 school year coming up in August. And so we're excited to see what that looks like, but also excited that all of these partnerships exist. And so I wish my kids just had one place that they went to, and most families don't just have one place that their child goes to. It's many different pieces that we all put together. It's hard when we talk about, you know, the child care crisis, and especially for children and families. Families report that they need child care, but we don't really track all of the many different ways they have found a solution. And every single family's solution looks completely different, whether it be family, friend, and neighbor care that you tap into, i.e. grandma or aunt, that helps with the transportation from one place to the next. And so when we're looking at that school age care, that's also part of it too, and realizing there is a lot of different resources, but we're here to help.
Where can people, or what should people do? Do you want more people to get involved? If you do, how do they get involved? If employers are going, well, wait a minute, I've got issues I want to bring forward. How did they do that, Jim?
Well, there's a couple of, certainly from our side on the private sector employer side, there's two real options. First, always reach out to the Slo Chamber of Commerce. We have someone literally in our staff willing to come out, meet with you, figure out what works best for you in order to try and mitigate this issue. Additionally, we have, they're just launched literally today, the slofamilyfriendlywork.org. You can take a survey and look at what you have on your or how your company operates and how you could be more friendly, get an assessment back, and really have us help you figure out what to do to try and make it work for your business. Whether you're a business of two or three, or you're a business of 1,000, right? There are so many opportunities. And really, everybody we've talked to has said from the get-go, I didn't even realize I could do these other 10 things. And now that you've brought them up, that's what I'm going to do. And all of those things, all those pieces, as Rochelle and Lauren have all talked about, are pieces that are going to fill the gap so that we can actually do this. And a little bit on that family friendly care is, we talked about children. This is about child care. We didn't even add in the piece of elder care, which is another part.
Don't get me going. Right.
For a business side, we need to be thinking about that holistically, because that's a whole nother piece is out there, and we just need to tackle from the private sector side in terms of how our employees have to deal with every day.
Yeah. And if you look at, and just to go to that, 1 in 5 Americans is a caregiver, an unpaid caregiver for a person over 50.
And the saddest part is, it, as Rochelle brought up, almost always a woman. And we have seen that number of women in the workforce drive all the way back to 1980 levels, which we are missing out on an economic, even if you weren't looking at it from a social problem issue, which it absolutely is.
Absolutely.
An economic issue, 100 across the board, we are not being as productive and efficient as we could be.
No, we're going to do a show on that one too. Absolutely. And Rochelle and Lauren, we have just a couple of minutes. I want to make sure that we get anything said or brought up. How do people get a hold of, what resources are available? You mentioned that, Rochelle. How did they do that?
Definitely. So they can always reach out to the Child Care Planning Council. We're at www.sanluischildcare.org. It's the best way to find our contact information, email, call. And our job is to connect. That is what we do. So it could be, I need a child care provider. We will find a way to connect you. Or it can be, I'd like to be a part of the solution and how. And so that's the other piece too. So if there's anyone that is looking for child care, needs child care, wants to be part of a solution, you can visit us at the Child Care Planning Council.
And as part of the solution, if they want to become a child caregiver.
Yes.
Okay. And Lauren?
Yes, same thing. So along with those resources that Rochelle just shared out, we always refer people to her website, but also for our specific early learning centers throughout the county. If families are interested in care for children from 3 to 5 years old, they can visit the San Luis Obispo County Office website at slocoe.org/preschools. And if people out there are listening who say, I want to be part of the solution, I want to learn more about that Ticket to Teach program or dual enrollment or Cuesta, tickettoteach.org, ticket, T-I-C-K-E-T, the number 2, teach, T-A-C-H.org.
Thank you. And I want to thank my guests today for their joining me, Lauren Thorne, Rochelle Bollet, and Jim D'Antona. Please join Mario Espinola Kulik next week as he and his guests from the Access Support Network are going to be talking about how to support neighbors and loved ones with HIV and Hep C. Central Coast Voices has been sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities and the San Luis Obispo Community Foundation. I'm Chris Kington Barker. Thank you for joining us.
You've been listening to Central Coast Voices. And now we are getting ready to hear Latino Voices. That's coming up in just a few minutes. This is KCBX HD1 San Luis Obispo at 90.1 FM, KNBX HD1 San Ardo at 91.7 FM, and KSBX Santa Barbara at 89.5 FM. In Avila Beach, we're at 90.9 FM. We serve Cayucas and Northern Morro Bay at 91.1 FM. For the San Ynez Valley and the Cambria-San Simeon area, we're at 90.9 FM. And in Lompoc, Vandenberg Village area, we're at 95.1 FM.